What is different about this night? Why is the air so thick with life? Why do the trees stand at attention, as if the world is waiting to exhale? Why has the groaning of creation ceased in this moment? So Joseph left Nazareth, a town in Galilee, and went to the town of Bethlehem in Judea, known as the town of David. Joseph went there because he was from the family of David. Joseph registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged, and who was now pregnant. While they were in Bethlehem, the time came for Mary to have the baby, and she gave birth to her first son. Because there were no rooms left in the inn, she wrapped the baby with pieces of cloth and laid him in a box where animals are fed. That night, some shepherds were in the fields nearby watching their sheep, and an angel of the Lord stood before them. The glory of the Lord was shining around them, and they became very frightened. The angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I am bringing you good news that will be a great joy to all the people. Today your Savior was born in the town of David. He is Christ, the Lord. This is how you will know him. You will find a baby wrapped in pieces of cloth and lying in a feeding box." And a very large group of angels from heaven joined the first angel, praising God and saying, angels left them and went back to heaven. The shepherds said to each other, "Let's go to Bethlehem. Let's see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." So the shepherds went quickly and found Mary and Joseph and the baby, who was lying in a feeding box. When they had seen him, they told what the angels had said about this child. Everyone was amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured these things and continued to think about them. Then the shepherds went back to their sheep, praising God and thanking him for everything they had seen and heard. It had been just as the angel had told them.
It's such an interesting juxtaposition to go from sort of the Middle Eastern style music to it's the most wonderful time of the year, you know, blaring with mall scenes. Somewhere it's really interesting to go from how we've tried to have Americana Christmas out in the atrium and then come in here and you have a little scene from the Middle East. There's all kinds of juxtapositions that are present when you take a look at the Christmas story. And we're looking at all the individual stories that make up the original Christmas story. We're looking at the different characters or some of the characters involved. Before I kick into that, I want to highlight one thing that's out in the atrium for you. You know, I hear sometimes people go, "Man, I'm not sure what to get my, you know, girlfriend or boyfriend for Christmas," or "I'm not sure what to get myself for Christmas." You ever heard that? How many of you say, "I'm going to buy myself a Christmas present"? Just say, "I'm going to buy myself something." You don't need to buy yourself a Christmas present. Like, I have to justify buying myself something. Just buy yourself something. And some of us, one of the great things you might want to buy yourself is our church is comprised of a lot of us who have never read the Bible or don't have a Bible. And that's because we started our church to really touch our friends' lives who weren't going to church and weren't Bible toters or Bible even believers or Bible readers. And as we come closer to Christ, it's important for us to see what exactly God is all about as written in the Scriptures. And some of us don't have our own Bible, or if we do, it's something Aunt Millie passed on to us when she died, and it's this language we can't understand. I just would recommend, if you're looking for it, go get yourself a Bible. One I'm recommending, if you want to look at it, is called the Life Application Bible. We have copies that you can browse out in the atrium at the Information Center. We've never sold anything here at Crossroads. We don't want people to get upset or confused that we're not here to make money. We've never sold anything here, never will, so we're not selling these. And we're not getting a cut on where you might go to buy them either. But there's some ideas of what you might want to look for out there. It's just important as we go on the next year, we're going to talk more and more about how is it that you encounter God for yourself in your own time with God and as you read the Bible. And the first step is to have a Bible you can understand. So you might want to look at that. But let's pray before we go any further. God, thank you for the original Christmas story. And as we take a look at the story today of the shepherds, I pray that you'd help us to see how we have a lot in common with them and how many of us want to have more in common with them. So help my words to be clear. And I ask that you would help us to be transported in time back to what it must have been like 2,000 some years ago. I pray these things in your name. Amen. You know, as I was praying about being transported back in time 2,000 years, it seems like major publications love to take us back 2,000 years or so. You can go to Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, Time. You know, this is the time of year for everyone to give Jesus free press. And so they got one on the birth of Jesus. And every year they kind of prayed out the same normal scholars or some of the scholars and some of the other things that people say. And oftentimes there's things in there that sort of shake you a little bit. One of the things that was in the Newsweek recently, one of the quotes I thought was interesting, it said this. Said, a man with no human father, a king who died a criminal's death, this is speaking of Jesus, a God who assures us of everlasting life and a world to come while the world he made is consumed by war and strife. Christianity is a religion of perplexing contradictions. To live an examined faith, believers have to acknowledge those complexities and engage them, however frustrating it may be. I think there's a lot of truth there. Not contradictions in the sense that they can't be understood, but a lot of what we think Christmas is or God is, he isn't. And that's what we're trying to figure out this series. So last week we looked at Mary, who was the girl, probably about 13 years old when God came upon her. About 13. I mean, she wasn't like middle-aged Mrs. having her whole stuff together. Actually, and speaking of that, let's go to Newsweek, because Newsweek had some interesting artistic renderings that they had. Let's take a look at one here. What's wrong with this picture? You ever play that old game, what's wrong with this picture? See if you can look at what's wrong with this picture. I just gave one away. You know, Mary was probably about 13. She wasn't 45. What else do you see here? Let's stay on Mary for a little bit. Mary, you can whisper to somebody next to you if you see something. I'll just highlight a couple of them. Mary, she definitely wasn't that pasty white. She grew up and lived in the Middle East. She wasn't that pasty white, if white at all. Another thing is, I noticed the Baroque architecture or the Victorian architecture. I don't know if it's Baroque or Victorian. I flunked that class. See it off in the distance there. Quite a far cry from our Indiana Jones set that we have here. Also, they didn't have kneelers in the Catholic or Anglican church back then either. First, they didn't have that. And you see, Gutenberg didn't invent the printing press, although maybe Mary had a special bound book just for herself right on that thing. And a lot of times what we tend to do is we tend to paint scenes the way we want them to be because we want religion to be about us. We want spirituality to be about us. So we remember it within our own framework. You even see today as we did some of the songs today, some of the things in the songs are definitely not in the Scriptures. But yet we'll use artistic renderings to help us. And that's not always all that bad. But the core, we've got to say, am I really trying to discover the God who is, or am I just trying to paint him or her or he or whatever I want she it to be to make me feel good and make me be right? Mary was the girl. Today we're talking about the grunts. We're talking about the shepherds. I've learned living in Cincinnati that the grunt is not necessarily a positive term. Coming from Pittsburgh, it was a very positive term. To be a grunt worker was to be somebody who brought diligence and your A game to physical labor. And that was a very common and positive term in the circles I ran in, but I found it was like, come here and called somebody a grunt, they go, what are you talking about? Call me a grunt. Grunts are people who love to work and they have a great work ethic. And the grunts in the story are the shepherds. The shepherds are grunts. They are the, unfortunately, grunts meant something somewhat negative back then because the manual laborers were the low, low class part of the social ladder. Next week, we're going to take a look at the Magi or the wise men. And we see in Christmas this interesting thing. Either ends of the economic spectrum, shepherds, Magi, or wise men, all are included. And this is so interesting how God works. He works all the way across economic bands, all the way across social strata. And the shepherds, though, back in those times were the lowest of the low. They were like the day manual laborers, except they were believed to have no honor because they were oftentimes hired out and they would take property. They would steal things. They would steal the very sheep that they were supposed to be watching over. They were seen as, not seen as, they were illiterate. They were uneducated. They couldn't even testify in a court of law. And yet for some reason, God calls on the lowest of the low to use them and to give them a sign, give them a message. Interesting, because most of us only want to spend time with the highest of the high. We want to spend time with somebody who's one economic level ahead of us, one popularity band above us. We're not looking like to be around people who are quote unquote lower than us, whatever that means, lower than us. And yet God calls in and he gives an incredible, miraculous spiritual experience to the lowest of the low. Let's take a look at this. Luke chapter 2, verse 9 to 10. Three things we see with these grunt workers. By the way, I've been thinking about the shepherds a lot recently because when I go out front and I watch how they do construction, you know, it's a very big distraction to getting your work done. When they got all kind of like cool equipment going on out front, very huge, huge distraction, you know. But it's cool. So I'm going out watching and you see these guys who are some of them are the epitome of grunt workers in the positive, utter, like, high-octane sense. I mean, out there working in rain, mud, lugging concrete. I just see them like, oh, man, dude, you are it. And see, I can identify with those guys because I went through college, and my summers, most of the time, were spent working construction sites, and I wasn't skilled enough to do anything, so I was a grunt worker. I remember going to a guy who owned a construction company. I said, look, man, I do not want to go back to live with my parents. I don't want to. I've been out of the house now, out of my parents' house for 8 months. Don't send me back over the summer. I'll stay here if you just give me a job. Anything. I'll lug concrete. I'll backfill trenches and whatever it was. And I learned to the you know, calluses in your hands and soreness at the end of the day. And I think this is the way that the grunts were. They were these people that just got up every day and did what they needed to do. And nobody honored them. Nobody gave them any time except for God. Verse 9, an angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. A couple key words here. We got the words terrified, and the word don't be afraid, says the angels. Says the angel. One angel shows up and the shepherds were terrified. Three things that happens when God gets involved in your life, when God starts to affect your story. One is there's a level of being terrified, being overwhelmed by God. And the shepherds were terrified. Let's go back to that picture for a minute. Let's play what's wrong with this picture again. Let's go to a specific piece of this picture that was in Newsweek and look at how they have the angel depicted. We have that guy up there. We go. Now tell me, would anybody be afraid if this angel showed up? This is like, you know, the Gerber baby with a wig on. You know, would anybody, in fact, think of the artistic renderings we have. Has anyone ever seen a little angel that you'd ever be terrified of? I mean, come on. Who's ever afraid of a fat little baby in red hair with a harp? That's the kind of way we see angels. No one gets afraid. This is one of the ways that modern depictions of spirituality is really, really hurts us. It always depicts angels as something that is less than and not the way it really was. You know, another example is cheesed by an angel, or touched by an angel, I mean. I don't know if you've ever seen, you know, touched by an angel. You know, it's a good family show, I guess. They don't have any swear words in it. But if you want to have an understanding of what angels are, don't watch that show. I mean, who's ever watched Touched by an Angel and be afraid? I mean, some people when they see Del Reese might be somewhat intimidated, but how many people are ever afraid by any depiction of spiritual angels that you see? You know, what do we see? We talk about angels singing. Even that hymn that hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn king. And we kind of captured on that with the big lights that came and blinded everybody. It's not necessarily bad to use art that's not by rote exactly part of the story. That's not necessarily bad. But it's not always helpful if the full picture is in view. The angels never sing in the story. They never sing. In fact, as far as I'm aware, the angels never have harps in the entire scriptures. Scriptures only speak of two different times the angels sing. One time, it depicts angels singing as before there was a great rebellion in heaven. There was a great rebellion in heaven. I don't know if you realize or not, but Satan, Lucifer, or, you know, little Nicky was up in heaven, part of God's angels, and led a rebellion, led a revolt, and one third of the angels fell and left heaven. At that point, kind of started messing us up here on earth, and Adam and Eve and taking the apple happened not too long ago, not long after that. So we have initially the angels are singing when everything is fine, and then the other time angels sing in scripture, in the book of Revelation, it's the very last book in the Bible, and it's sort of a forelook at how things are going to be when everything's working right again, and there is singing again. In between that, there's zero singing. The angels don't sing. Why aren't they singing? Because they're battling, that's why. They sing, they're battling. You know, scriptures don't talk about the bringing harps. What that does talk about is coming with swords. Angels are armed entities. They're armed entities. And when they show up in battle garb, you get freaked out. Mary got freaked out. The grunt workers who never got freaked out by anything. These are strong dudes. These are guys who would fend off wolves if they needed to, carry around lambs. They get freaked out by one angel. One angel shows up. Say, oh, hold on, man. Don't be afraid. I'm not coming to womp on you. Hold on. It's kind of interesting because it's almost like this angel must have been talking with his buddies, said, I don't want to freak this guy out too much. I'll go first and just kind of break the ice. And then we'll do one of those Emeril Lagasse BAM things. We'll do one of those BAM things on him. And they do the BAM on him. Let's take a look at the next verse. Suddenly, verse 13, a great company of the heavenly hosts appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth, peace to men on whom his favor rests. A great company of the heavenly host. This means a legion, an armed force. This is not a choir that shows up. It's not a giant Christmas tree with angels sitting in it. Really. The heavenly host referred to angels who are armed to the hilt that are coming to do battle. And there is a battle that's waging. And the Messiah is about to be born. The Savior, the one who is going to lead in battle to the point where he will lose his life in a piece of the battle. And they are coming to usher this in, and they are armed to the hilt. By the way, I think this is some of how art has let us down, is one of the reasons why many men have given up the church or given up God or given up the idea of spirituality. I'm going to speak with generalities here if I could, okay? There's, you know, I don't know many chicks who go buy paint guns, you know, or who buy broadswords after they watch Braveheart. Men do that kind of stuff. Women do too, generally, but generally speaking, guys like the violent stuff. Guys like the killing stuff. Guys like those kind of things. And so when we have a spirituality or a church is all about angels who sing and God says, come and be a part of my big Christmas tree. Woo, hippie, let me be a part of that. Who wants to be a part of that? Well, the reason why that's about 30 to 70% men to women in the average church in America. What God does when he invites us to be a part of what he is doing. And sometimes that is difficult. It is grunt work. It is intense battle sometimes. And this is what's happening right now. And this is what the angels are telling the shepherds to get up and go do. And so the shepherds, they get it. They're like, okay, man, you want us to be a part of the team? We'll get on it. And so here's what happens in the next verse. When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about. So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. They hurried. What do the shepherds do? They hurry. There is certain times when hurry is necessary. I know that some of us think, oh yeah, of course, that's Christmas. That's all I do at Christmas, is hurry. No, that's a different kind. That's stress. That's stress. But there is a hurry in the sense of urgency that comes upon our life from time to time. If you read much of the writing of some of the ancient mystics, or you go to a spiritual development seminar, some such thing, almost always it focuses on healthy things that we need to focus on. Things like taking one day out of seven as a Sabbath to be a time of rest and not kind of working and working and working. And things like slowing down, having a quiet contemplative time of prayer and reflection and different things. Those are very healthy. I've never heard someone talk about the spiritual discipline of hurry, though. There is a spiritual discipline. There is a season where you say, man, right now, I just need to get in and get it done. Get her done. I need to go get on it. There needs to be a little urgency. And the shepherds don't go, okay, well, let's just stop and pray about what we should do. I mean, dudes with swords just showed up around them. So, okay, I'm going. They drop what they need to go, and they go immediately. They're right outside the town of Bethlehem, and they immediately go into Bethlehem. By the way, Bethlehem, do you know that we have a word for Bethlehem today? It's called Bedlam. And you know where we get the word Bedlam? It's actually related to Bethlehem. In the 1500s in Europe, there was an old Catholic priory that went called St. Mary of Bethlehem. It sort of went out of business. They decided to relocate it. But the facility stayed there, and the city decided to run it as an insane asylum. And it was St. Mary of Bethlehem Insane Asylum. It was city run. And what they would do is they would charge admission. This wasn't back in the time of human rights. Anybody could go there who wanted to go to. You could pay a price, and you would go in, and what you would do for entertainment is you would heckle the inmates. I mean, you can imagine, poor folks who are mentally and psychologically and emotionally struggling would have strangers come in and just heckle them because they wanted to see them scream and freak out. And so the cacophony of sound and the confusion and the bedlam that would happen in this priory of Bethlehem is where we get the word Bedlam today. And many of us, we're in that kind of hurry. And that's not the hurry I'm talking about. That's stress. That's chaos. That's not being able to manage our life. But there needs to be a sense of hurry. Hey, you know, you're going to be sitting around some room somewhere sipping eggnog, and you're going to be hanging out with one person. And you know, that might be the very last time you ever get to talk with that person. They're getting up in years. Something tragic might happen. Maybe they're only 30, but something's tragic going to happen. You need to hurry and have a conversation. Hurry. Hurry. Have the conversation. I don't know what the conversation is. Hurry. Don't wait. Don't sit back. Hurry. Get on it. Get in and make that conversation happen. Sometimes we have to hurry to make plans to rest. This is what I've been doing the last 5 days. Whit talked about the fact that we're canceling services Christmas and New Year's weekend, and I was kind of waiting for a barrage of emails and hate anonymous connect cards after last week. And I gotta hand it to you all. You are not into religion. It's a great thing. I thought we'd get a lot of heat. We didn't. You know, I talked before about the difference between religion and relationship with God. Religion is I must do. I must be there to have. I must do. So, ho! You mean I can't do and go to an auditorium on a weekend and do what I need? Whereas relationship is, okay, if I can go to that place and I can be with God and connect, that's great. But I don't have to do in order to connect with God. I can just be. I can vacate. I can do something different. So I expected a big, you know, but it didn't happen. It's a wonderful, beautiful thing. It's fantastic to be able to say, man, I just want to slow. So I start thinking, a couple things this last week hit me. One was, David was talking about, okay, Brian, does that mean that everyone has to like double or triple give or put in extra tithing envelopes or whatever? And I said, no, it doesn't mean what it means at all. And I thought about that more this last week. I thought, you know, the one thing I didn't mention there is when you have a relationship with God, you don't need to go someplace to be a part of what he's doing. My giving is never related to where I go. It's a regular discipline in my life. 20 years since I've been a Christ follower, and before, 10% called tithing, just automatic, bam, bam, as a starting point. Doesn't matter if I'm here or anywhere. Comes out of my checking account automatically. I set it up years ago for that. Those things you do, not because you feel compelled, but because you have a sense of relationship that those disciplines get set up in your life regardless of where you're actually sitting on your butt. And I thought about this last week. I had to do some hurrying because I realized, oh man, I hadn't even thought about this. 2 weekends, I'm not going to be speaking or worried about who's speaking. By the way, when people like Brian Wells speak, I never really worry because, you know, they're awesome people. I just mean I feel a level of responsibility. And so I looked at Olivia and said, hey, we ought to think about like doing something. Even if we just like sit in our butts and watch blockbuster movies nonstop, we got to hurry and plan that. Or we got to hurry and go somewhere. And I thought about maybe we can go to this place. And I looked into that, and then it was called the Crazy Campaign Commitment. Couldn't do what I wanted to do. Different things come in like that, but you realize, I got to hurry. I got to make this thing happen. And friends, there are things that can uniquely happen in your life over the next 3 weeks. You need to hurry. Hurry. Make those things happen. Not out of stress, but out of urgency. When I used to work in construction, there was always a different pace that came. Whenever I heard the sound of that red Ford dump truck, one of my boss would drive a red Ford dump truck, and you could hear that thing because it had holes in the muffler, and you could hear that thing from a mile away, and as soon as that you heard that thing, you picked up the pace. It was like, okay, I'm picking. Another boss, you could actually tell what he sounded like, his walk, if you were working in a place and there was a gravel driveway, you could actually notice his gait. And when the steps of him were around, you picked up the pace. This is what it's like when you're around God. Not a level of stress, not a level of, oh, obligation, I got to do. But when you are around the footsteps of God, or you hear his whisper, or you sense his presence, you naturally pick it up. It naturally does something to you. And this is what happens to the shepherds. They naturally pick it up. They naturally need to go where this Messiah is, where Mary and Joseph are. And they're compelled to do that. And when they go there, something happens that they really hadn't planned on. Verse 20. After, I'll take back to when they leave. They hadn't planned on this when they leave. Verse 20. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. For all the things they had heard and seen. I love those words. Heard and seen. You know, sometimes we think, I need to worship God because of what I believe. This is what happens. The shepherds end up worshiping God. They end up worshiping God. It's because of what they have heard and they've seen. Sometimes we think that what to worship means, which worship means to reflect back to God who he is. It means I'm in the midst of something, I just reflect back to him thanksgiving. I just reflect back to him the mental acknowledgement that he is great. And sometimes we think that worship comes out of what we believe. No, there's a lot of things you believe. I believe this stage is going to keep me up. I don't worship as a result of that. Your belief really has nothing to do with whether or not you worship God or not. God does not look for you to get all the right beliefs about who he is, and then you can worship. What he does is he looks for you to experience him the way he really is, and then you can naturally reflect back to him who he is based on what you have heard and seen, or based on what you have sensed. This is what happens with these shepherds. They think they're just going for a one-stop spiritual hit. Hey man, angels came, cool, oh, I'm going to go see the Messiah, that's fine too. They think it's just coming to a one-time spiritual hit, but that's not. They turn around and they can't stop worshiping, talking about God, what they've heard and what they've seen. Spirituality is huge today. General spirituality is huge today. You can pick it up in magazines. You can turn on PBS and see spiritual gurus. You can go to the movies and see spiritual people. You can go to different organizations. Who's against spirituality? Nobody's against spirituality. Everyone loves spirituality. Why is that? Because spirituality, the way I'm referring to it in terms of general spirituality, it makes me feel good. It tells me what I want my story to be. I tell it how to make me feel good. I go and find the spiritual guru that paints a story of who I am that I like to hear. I go and find a spiritual guru that paints the world and the values of the world the way that affirms my values and makes me feel good. That's general spirituality. Everybody likes general spirituality. But there's a difference between general spirituality and genuine spirituality. Genuine spirituality is when God, the God, you have an encounter with him and you don't think about yourself any longer. As long as you're thinking about yourself, as long as you're thinking about your own feelings, about your own wants, you've not encountered the real God. You've encountered general spirituality. Every time someone comes to face with the real God, genuine spirituality, the natural response is to go outside of ourselves. The shepherds aren't coming back going, oh man, we feel so good, isn't this nice? The shepherds are coming back saying, God, I don't know exactly what you're doing. I don't know exactly who you are, but I got to tell you, that was awesome. You are great. Oh God, you were incredible that you controlled these angels and they came and visited me. You know that you were getting in touch with God when you were going outside of yourself and you were emptying yourself of your own petty spirituality, and you were coming face to face with what God is doing spiritually in you that you couldn't control. They worshiped. They worshiped. They naturally reflected back to God and said great things to God. And by the way, it doesn't say they were singing either. Maybe they were singing. I guess some people say, hey, I don't see more people singing at Crossroads. Why aren't people worshiping? Where does it say that singing is where you worship? Worship is anything where you say, man, I'm emptying myself, God, so that I can be filled with you. God, I pray that as we do this song, that we would come in touch with you, that you would come in touch with us, because you are worthy. You are worthy. You are worth our thoughts. You are worth our hurrying. You are worth our resting. You're even worth our singing. God, thanks for the story of the shepherds, those grunts who are used in a great way. And I pray that this week we learn from them. We would have a healthy fear of you. We would hurry and be urgent about the thing that we need to get about. And that through it all, we would just naturally connect with you, relate to you, and worship you. In the name of Christ, I pray.